The former First Minister and DUP leader Peter Robinson has been making the headlines. Speaking with our news team yesterday evening, just about tea time, Mr. Robinson said Brexit had been highly disruptive. He also questioned the majority of one system and expressed concern at its possible use in a border poll. His comments happened to come as a number of academics at Queen's University signed a letter protesting at his appointment as an honorary professor at the university. Now, Peter Robinson was speaking to Aideen in the U105 newsroom yesterday at, as I say, about tea time.
What I do know is that the issue has been highly disruptive in terms of our ability to get things done here in Northern Ireland. I think there are many people who are wanting to see at least what the shape of the Brexit negotiations will be before they tie the knot in relation to our local decisions. So I want that issue to be dealt with and to be dealt with in a way that is not going to be divisive within the community.
Do you think you could ever possibly see a second referendum on Brexit?
Well, let me pose another question to you. If anybody thinks it is justifiable to have a second referendum, how much more justifiable would it be if a border poll with a majority of one was to decide that we should leave the United Kingdom? Would those same people be saying we should have a second referendum if they didn't like the result of the first one? I mean, I think we need to look at the fact that there is a world of a difference between deciding to come out of a common market and changing your national sovereignty, and that it requires years of negotiations, a transition period, and claims for a second referendum in relation to coming out of an economic partnership. How much stronger is the case in relation to a border poll where you're changing sovereignty?
Peter Robinson is speaking to our newsroom yesterday evening, and you may be aware that a significant number of staff, teaching staff at Queen's University, are less than happy with his appointment as a professor. An honorary professorship has been awarded to Peter Robinson, and I'll just give you a brief running of the letter. It says, "We, the undersigned, are indeed expressing profound regret at the recent appointment of Peter Robinson to an honorary professorship in Queen's University in Belfast. As you may well know, Mr. Robinson has publicly defended calling homosexuality an abomination in 2008. He has privately apologized to some Muslims for having publicly defended a pastor's claim that Islam is satanic and heretical in 2014, but he has not publicly distanced himself from these Islamophobic statements. If Queen's University and the George Mitchell Institute wants to help to create an inclusive, secure and enriched society, then honouring and magnifying the views of someone so opposed to an inclusive society is directly contrary to its goals. In appointing Mr. Robinson to an honorary professorship, the Institute is weaving hostility to the LGBT and indeed the Muslim staff and students and weaving it into the fabric of the university." And it goes on to say, "We call for the George Mitchell Institute to make a public statement distancing itself from Mr. Robinson's repugnant views." There's more to it, but that's the thrust of it, and it's signed by a lot of doctors and professors, almost 40 of them, who work at Queen's University. Let me speak to political commentator Eamon Malley. Eamon, good morning.
Money, Frank.
First of all, Eamon, just in relation to the popularity or lack of popularity of Peter Robinson in the eyes of so many of the staff there at Queen's University, what do you make of that?
I must say I was a bit shocked myself when I heard the announcement, firstly, that Peter Robinson was being made, I think it's the equivalent of something like Professor Emeritus or something like that, and then Mitchell McLaughlin. Would I take a professorship in Queen's if I were offered one? Well, I would be a little concerned if somebody offered me a professorship. Am I qualified? Has Peter Robinson greater qualifications? Has Mr. McLaughlin greater qualifications than academics come through the course? The nice thing about that lecture last night was it was the first lecture hall where I, as a student, could stand up and take on the bloody professor. It was a great opportunity from that point of view, Frank. That was not the custom and practice when I was in university.
Yeah, but the question isn't over whether or not Peter Robinson has the academic brilliance to be a professor. It's whether or not he is being incredibly unfair to the LGBT community and Muslim staff, or indeed the LGBT staff and Muslim staff at Queen's University. Do those 40-ish, roughly, I think it's about 37 people, do they have a point?
Well, Peter Robinson addressed that last night. He was challenged particularly about the Muslim remark last night. And he pointed out something which I thought was rather relevant. He said, you know, had I not possibly come across the Muslim who actually saved my life when I had my heart attack, I could be dead. So he was pointing out that he spends a week with somebody from that background each year. So, you know, people, I say that he deeply regrets he ever made those remarks, but he didn't publicly say last night, I'm sorry I ever made those remarks.
And he publicly defended calling homosexuality an abomination in 2008. I don't want to go back and revisit that controversy, but he hasn't moved from that at that point.
Well, I mean, it's not the only thing from which he hasn't clarified. For example, he was there last night stoutly defending the role of Arlene Foster and the DUP leadership back in February when that deal fell apart. And the bottom line is, they should cut out this cant. There was a deal, Frank. Cut, sealed, the deal was there. And the bottom line is, two MPs were not in the loop. And one of them demanded to see the document at the weekend. And then the wobbling started all over the place within the party. And by this stage, the plan was already in train for Theresa May to come here. The plan to have the Taoiseach here the following within the next 48 hours, that was in place. There was an uprising, a popular uprising, a grassroots level, and Arlene Foster couldn't sell the deal, didn't even put it to the Assembly party. She was so in such a tizzy. Her own people dumped the deal at the last moment. She had done the deal, the deal was there. And how do I know? Her own people told her. And furthermore, I have it confirmed by both governments, Frank. So they should cut out this can and stop saying, oh, there was no deal, there was no deal. There was a deal. And why do you think Peter Robinson spent so much time last night dwelling on leadership? When you have a deal, he said, you take ownership, you sell the deal, you address the doubting Thomases, you condition your people. And it was a direct shot. It was a direct shot at Arlene Foster. So, I mean, you say, there was so much cant going on here there last night, you know.
I notice on Twitter you make a reference to the little kiss. You know, some people talk about a Judas kiss. Some people talk about a loving kiss. What sort of kiss are you referring to?
Well, it started with a kiss. Peter bounced in and he raced over and he landed a smacker on Arlene's cheek. Now, I suspect Arlene was as shocked as the gathering who could see this. Now, I'm not going to second guess why Peter gave her a kiss. Perhaps it was just a gesture. Maybe it was a gesture of reassurance. But had it another message? Could it be interpreted the way that you have said it? And in fact, was it a farewell kiss? Will we ever see Arlene Foster as First Minister again? Big question. Jim Wells holds a lot of cards in his hands, and people haven't put this in the balance yet.
Interesting commentary. Eamon, thank you. I want to speak to Alex Kane, political commentator as well. Alex, good morning.
Morning, Frank. Hello.
Let's just pick up on what Eamon's talking about there, the relationship between Peter Robinson and Arlene Foster, and I suppose the atmosphere in the room. Arlene Foster more or less agreeing with what Peter Robinson was saying, but she was interpreting it in a different way. What was your take?
I think the difficulty with any time an ex-leader makes a speech, particularly someone who's so significant to the DUP, co-founder of the DUP, someone who played, you know, probably still one of the most influential unionists of his generation. When he says something, you look at it particularly carefully. And I think Eamon is right about this. They're trying to pretend that there wasn't a deal when everybody knew there was a deal. And the difficulty with all of this, I wrote about it at the time, Barney and Eamon were writing about it. It was quite clear 90% of the deal had been done. The DUP got cold feet. They got cold feet because the leader didn't take control of it. And Robinson says that in the speech. It's not about Ireland specifically, but he says, if you show uncertainty, if the leader shows uncertainty, if there is doubt, if they're not selling it, if you allow, you know, the doubts and fears to creep in, that's what destroys a deal. It's quite clear that had Ireland at that moment, maybe 10 days earlier, before the Prime Minister, taken control of this and said, look, this is what this is going to involve. This is, if we're going to move forward, this is what is required. This is the best deal we can get. This is how we do it. She did none of that. She left it all, and then this great, you know, the chaos. But yeah, that's, I think, what it's very difficult to say. Knowing Robinson, I've observed him as a Zeman for 35, 40 years, knowing how he works, knowing how his mind works, knowing what he was saying. This was a man, even if you take the benign view, Frank, and say he wasn't deliberately attacking Ireland, he was certainly making it clear that if they get to the stage that there's another deal, he knows it's going to involve an Irish Language Act. He knows it's probably going to involve a petition of concern. If the leader doesn't take control of it from day one, it will fall. And as he said in that speech, yes, you will make yourself unpopular. Yes, you may have difficulties you weren't expecting, but that is the price you pay for leadership. And if you're not willing to pay that price, you shouldn't be leader. So yeah, maybe just in that, Frank, that sense of, well, maybe it was sent to Ireland, this is what leadership's about. You don't allow your colleagues to tell you what to do. You say, I'm leader, this is what I think we should do. You either back me, and if you don't back me, fine. Find someone else who can do it, but this is what I believe we should be doing. There was no sense of that back in February.
How worried is he about the possibility of a looming border poll and the suggestion that it might be very tight? He doesn't want it to be one way or the other, by one vote.
Well, I think the difficulty of that is, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, if the DUP, you know, back in whenever he had his first election as leader, had only beaten the Sinn Féin by one vote and had only, you know, had the majority and he was in the First Minister's office by one vote, one seat, he would have taken it. There would have been no complaints then. It would have been, well, this is democracy. His point, I think, is an interesting one. It's what he seems to be saying is, on the one hand, slightly confused message that there's no need. The unionists don't need to worry. All the polling evidence suggests that everything is fine. The polling evidence doesn't suggest that, Frank. Lucid Talk back in October said that the figures were tight between definite United Irelanders, definite United Kingdomers. There's a lot to play for in the middle ground, but still tight figures. Where the Queen's University poll, which only put the definite stayers in the United Kingdom at 50.3%, the lowest it has ever been. We have another poll, a UK-wide poll out today, big poll out, part of it related to Northern Ireland, which give definites for the Union at 45% and definites or possible definites for the United at 42%. Those figures are tight. Robinson's aware of that. I think what he's saying to unions, in one sense, he's not saying the words, we need to be worried, we need to think hard. He's saying, oh, well, let's look at the mechanics. Let's, you know, just moving from a United Kingdom, United Ireland, oh, we'd need this to happen, that to happen, we need to talk about this. How long would the negotiations take? It's almost like he's just shifted the debate somewhere entirely. He's sort of saying, look, don't worry about it, but if it does come, let's be prepared. And I think that is very significant for someone in his position, particularly when Arlene Foster, A, dismissed the whole nonsense and then said, and if it ever comes anyway, I wouldn't stay here. I think Robinson was making a slightly different argument, but an argument that, I mean, some people have said, oh, and one interpretation of some unions, oh, Robinson said, don't worry. He's not saying that. He's actually saying something much more significant. He's saying that I don't think a border poll would be won right now, but we have to look at all the huge questions surrounding the debate itself. Let's kickstart the debate. No, he wouldn't have said that 5 years ago, Frank, let alone 10, 15 years ago. Something very significant has happened within unionism over the past 5 years in terms of the fact that they're even willing to talk about border polls.
Okay, just stay with me. Eamon, do you buy into what Alex is saying, that analysis there of Peter Robinson and his border poll comments last night?
Oh, yes. In fact, I would maybe be on the side of Peter Robinson on one aspect of a border poll. Potentially, the slumbering hostilities could surface with the border poll in the wrong context. So I would actually have some empathy with that argument. And there's another statistic which emerged in this latest poll, and which is quite significant. It suggests some 28% of views of people in Northern Ireland
28% have shifted as a result of the dilemma over Brexit. And I've been saying this. I've been interfacing with unionists, Protestants, who definitely are looking at the situation very, very differently, against a backdrop, particularly people who are doing any sort of trading, faced with the possibility of a 20% tariff. If you're shipping milk across the border, if you're a border farmer, if you're involved in any sort of cross-border trading, and a hard Brexit came in, a hard border, hard Brexit call, if you like, this could be calamitous for a lot of business people along the border. So that 28% news which is emanating, that's reflecting something of what I've been saying. Furthermore, the Queen's survey, I thought it was highly challengeable, with only 21% being sympathetic to United Ireland at that stage. Because I know, because I live in the heart of middle-class nationalism in South Belfast and further afield, the professional classes have come out in areas like South Belfast and across Northern Ireland within the Catholic nationalist community. And why have they come out? It's the Arlene Foster factor, the crocodile remark factor, the renegades and the rebels factor. And that is why more and more nationalists are not looking towards devolved dormant. They are looking further down the line. And furthermore, Peter Robinson is wrong to think that RHI is not impacting. Sam McBride is undoing democracy based strictly on first-class, top-class reporting on a daily basis. He is exposing.
This is a reference to Sam McBride, political editor of the newsletter.
Yes. He is daily exposing, unlike anybody else, how we had a system run at Stormont by a party, perceived now for a party, a particular party. And do you know what is significant? No Sinn Féin person has appeared before that committee yet. That is significant. Will Sinn Féin appear before that committee? We have no indication. The suggestion is that DUP and people affiliated with them are going to go on appearing. So that what is going on there is impacting, and is saying to nationalists, why would we go back into power with these people? The Welsh on the deal that was done back in February, and the two governments have confirmed that deal was in the can. Why would they have two prime ministers coming here at that point in time to seal the deal? Now, the DUP Welsh done that, and then what's happening in the RHI is so deleterious, Frank, so debilitating, and there are unions. Professor Jim Dawn, and you heard him on Channel 4, he said the debate is going on among his people, and he suspects that there are people already talking about a new situation. Peter Robinson is on the money.
Okay.
He's a bright guy. He's on the money. He's a bright guy.
Okay, chaps, do stay with me. There's one other point I want to put to you in just a moment. Now, I know Alex is racing to a meeting. There's a couple of things I just want to put to you, Alex, before you go. One of them, I've touched on it with Eamon, but I didn't ask you. What do you make of the protest from the academics at Queen's in relation to Peter Robinson?
I'm not particularly surprised. I think Robinson's always been, over the years, he's not been particularly well disposed towards academics. He tends to be quite dismissive. Certainly some of the people who are helping or advising David Trimble in that sort of 97-98 period, the DUP were particularly dismissive of these people who didn't have the finger on the pulse. I think some of them would have been concerned about some of the comments he'd made over the years. I mean, I think they said it in their letter. And not simply on you know, but the comments about Muslims, but generally comments about, you know, maybe the DUP's failure to address certain key socio-moral issues and so on. So that didn't surprise me at all. I know he dismissed it last night when he was asked. He said 37. He went, oh, only 37. I have a wider issue with that. I'm just a little bit worried sometimes. I'm not quite sure. I mean, I don't want to knock him too much, but I'm not quite sure whether he deserves the role in the sense that, you know, to be an honorary professor of peace studies and things like that. Because if you look at how the DUP got themselves into the Assembly, if you look at the changes that were made to St Andrews, if you look at the relationship between the DUP and Sinn Féin over the past 10 years, if you look at, in real terms, just how little was done in terms of legislative change in Northern Ireland when he was First Minister, I'm not genuinely sure, Frank, that there's enough there to justify the role at all. And I think it's odd that in his speech last night, I would have thought he would have devoted maybe even 10 minutes of it just as a, when he talked about the experience of leadership and the experience of negotiation, didn't really spend very much time in saying, well, look, this is the Northern Ireland as it stood, you know, when we got involved. This is the Northern Ireland as it is now. This is the change of the DUP. As a leader, this is what I helped to change. This is what I'm bringing. This is my experience of how we've changed something to say how we can get. There was none of that at all. And I have to say that surprised me slightly.
Okay, and the other point that I wanted to make is in relation to something different, where Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, is visiting the Orange Museum today in East Belfast. And I'll just press the question by putting it to you like this. Which would be more impressive and more newsworthy? Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, in the Orange setting, or Arlene possibly going to see Fermanagh play in the Ulster final?
I think actually Leo in the Orange setting, because, again, no harm to her. There's a sense that somehow Arlene is has probably been pushed by her advisors towards, oh, you better go just to, you know, settle a few nerves and show that you're not. I mean, do you remember Tom Elliott? I think when he was leader of the UUP, wouldn't go to something. Whereas Varadkar, I think it's an interesting thing to do. I know it's counterbalanced by his opening the West Belfast Festival and he's going somewhere else as well. But in terms of newsworthiness, something that would make me think, well, that's interesting. I think Varadkar going, because Arlene's going to learn nothing from a GAA match. I hope she enjoys it. I'm not into sport myself. I hope she enjoys it. I hope she talks to some people. She's not going to get any political insights, I suspect. Varadkar, I think, today, and the Orange headquarters is not very far from where I live, I think he may discover that some of the people he will meet today and talk to today are actually far more subtle, far more nuanced, and far more interesting than he may have been led to believe if he just read, you know, local newspapers and listened to some particular spokesman. There's a lot of deep thinking, particularly by people like David Hume, who's one of the historians and has worked closely with the Orange. A lot of hard work been done there on the ground and across the organisation. And I think if he hears about that and talks about that, he may come away and say to his own advisors, look, there are people in this organisation we can and should be talking to.
Okay, thank you very much, Alex. And Eamon, just on that point about the Taoiseach visiting and the possibility of Arlene going to the Ulster final, which do you think is the most noteworthy or newsworthy?
Well, they're both significant. People are crying out for hope, Frank. Anything that gives people hope. People, they're desperate for a clutch. They're desperate for gestures, positive things being done. On the EamonMalley.com, the blog, our blog, there's a young man called David Honeyford wrote a fantastic article this week. There's been huge traction on it about the interaction between Lisbon Rugby Club and Glenavy GAA Club. The kids at the end of each season go to play respectively in during the rugby term and during the GAA term, interchanging, exchanging, meeting, etc. The response to that article has been one of the biggest responses of any item I've had on the website. I'm just saying to you, Frank, people want hope. Leo Varadkar going to the Schomburg House, the House of Orange today, well done, fantastic. Arlene going to the GAA, she's had a problem getting her head around that. If she goes to see Fermanagh playing in the next game, fantastic. I think people want hope. And anything at all, people are reaching out, they want something. So good luck to both of them if they play ball.
Do you think she'd stand for the anthem? Would she arrive in time for it, considering the game is in the Republic of Ireland?
You've been mischievous now, Frank. No. I can't read her mind. I think Peter arrived late for that part of the Buchanan Cup final, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, but that game was in Britain. That game wasn't in some Frank, foreign land.
Frank, Arlene wouldn't even go to see the Republic of Ireland with Martin McGuinness when Martin McGuinness went to see Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland at that time. So if she were to go to this GAA match, I think, as people would say, fair play, more of that. But one swallow doesn't make a summer. And, you know, reflecting on Peter Robinson's time in politics, and the other thing which was significant last night, Frank, the way he addressed his cooperation with Martin McGuinness when he was in office, through how they travelled internationally as a unit and how they complemented each other. That was not said for nothing last night. That was also delivering a message. So, but at the same time, the trouble with Peter historically was his swallows didn't make a summer. The one swallow, two swallow, going to one GAA match, saying it can't be us and them, it has to be us educationally on. One swallow doesn't make a summer. You have to build a platform and convince everybody of your bona fides. And that applies to all politicians. Like Gerry Adams talking about breaking the bastards. Who thinks that was edifying? Who thinks that unionism were reassured when he uttered that utterance? People need hope, Frank.
All right, Eamon, thank you very much. And we're always searching for it here on this very programme. And sometimes it comes in the form of the voices that we listen to and the points that they make. And Jamie's got a point that he wishes to make, having listened very patiently indeed to our commentators, Alex Kane and Eamon Malley. Jamie, go ahead.
Yes, Frank. I think it's here, border poll. I don't understand this right now. They've got this here in United Ireland. Sinn Féin thinks they're going to get United Ireland, right? And I don't know where they're coming from. How are they going to get that there? It's not going to happen. Do you know what I mean, Frank?
So you would be against the idea of a border poll being held, or do you think they're simply wasting their time because they'd be roundly defeated?
They're wasting time and they're wasting money in doing it. So they are, Frank. They're all sitting up there with their finger. Now, I don't mean to say it, but sitting their finger up their backside and not pulling them out. Do you get what I mean?
Well, I certainly have a picture that probably is slightly disturbing, but at the same time, it's how you see the possibility of whether or not a border poll is going to be held. I think we can take from it that you're clearly against any suggestion that a border poll comes to pass.